Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming. Today is going to be a relatively brief overview about some federal law and how it interposes with your governing documents, particularly or exclusively as it pertains to age-restricted communities. But before we start, can I just get a show of hands as to those who either manage in one and or live in one, just so we have an idea? Okay. And of those of you who have raised your hand, if you're a manager, is it your first one that you're managing, or okay? So we're fairly educated here. What you have in your little packet is just a little outline about some of the things we're going to cover, and I included in it some of the things that you may want to either look at or consider from the association standpoint in terms of certain reporting that you need to do or notices that you may want to give to your membership when you're trying to make certain that you stay qualified as an age-restricted community. I'm going to go through a little bit about the Fair Housing Act, which is the law that created these things. Nicole and I are going to probably talk a little bit about some of the specific governance issues that we deal with age-restricted. All right, we all know that they can be a different animal than the ones that are open up to the population at large. And as an attorney, and the good and bad things you hear about us, I'm going to try and deal with the three B's of public speaking. And that will be, be brief, okay, be direct, and then be seated, okay? I'm going to start first with the Fair Housing Act. The Fair Housing Act came into being in the late 80s, and that is a federal law that created this whole morass that we have to deal with. That was the legislation that came in that said, hey, you folks, all right, if you are of a certain age, can restrict and discriminate against others from living in your community. All right, there's been some differences and some changes throughout the years, since then. But let me just talk a little bit about fair housing. Fair housing isn't just about age-restricted communities. Fair housing deals with a lot of other issues. But for our purposes, we're going to talk not necessarily about discrimination in terms of who can move in, all right, sex, ethnicity, and the like. We're strictly going to be talking about age. And when it comes to the federal law, you have to bear in mind, and this is one of the threshold issues that we're always dealing with, you've got federal law at the very top. You've got your governing documents way down here. All right, and we're always dealing with certain issues. Well, my master deed or my declaration says the following. Well, federal law says you can or can't do something. You have to realize that you cannot, all right, deal with something other than what federal law says. Federal law is almost always going to preempt any state law unless it's overturned and or your governing documents. So you need to know that uphand. Or up front, but it is important to understand, similar to state constitutions versus federal constitutions. Federal constitution gives us a threshold of rights that we're all entitled to. Your state constitutions can give you more rights, it can't give you any less, similar to your governing documents. And I'm going to use master deed and declaration a little bit and intersperse, but just if I do say one or the other, it really deals with both. Similar to your master deed can be more discriminatory, all right, but it can't be less than certain threshold levels that are set within the Fair Housing Act. One of the biggest things that we find with the Fair Housing Act are folks who are disabled, okay, and disabled, to understand in terms of the definition, is that there's an issue of one of their life activities, walking, hearing, things of that nature, where they may come to you and they're going to say, look, I need a ramp. I have to have a ramp to access my unit. A lot of folks, the first impression is that, well, no, it's going to hurt the consistency. Is there anybody here who would dispute the fact that if they can show that there's a need for that ramp, that they're not entitled to that ramp? Good. You have an educated class here. They are entitled to that ramp, which is called a reasonable accommodation. Right? But then the next issue is, well, who pays for that ramp? And again, dealing with folks sometimes who are living in these communities for the first time, they feel, that it's got to be all in the homeowner, and the homeowner will sometimes feel that it's got to be the association. Bear in mind, with a reasonable accommodation, they are entitled to it, but they have to pay for it. It's up to them to pay for that ramp. And when they're done using it, it's up to them to pay to have that ramp removed. Once it's in there, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be there forever. If the accommodation is no longer needed, that ramp should be removed. I'm sure those who are managing, that there's a lot of education that you've got to do with your boards. It's a threshold issue with us all the time, that we're constantly explaining to people that you must accommodate. However, they must pay for it. And we have a lot of tension sometimes in these communities in that regard. Modifications. all right, or also they fall under with this reasonable accommodation. Modifications could be the same type of a thing, either, you know, they fall under the same format in terms of ramps and the like. Similar to ramp, if you need some guardrails or something going to your unit and nobody else has guardrails, right, so that you can get up into your front door, it's something that we must allow. And again, when I say must allow, it can't be one of those things where the homeowner just says or the member says, look, I have this disability, you must believe me, and I need this accommodation. There is some inquiry that can be made. We always tell our clients, you know, you want a doctor's note to start. We all know what happens sometimes with doctor's notes, all right? If you get a prescription from a doctor, most of us, kind of like lawyers sometimes, you can't read what the doctor says. So we're always going to go back and say, well, we just don't want to see something either on a prescription pad, okay, and or on a letter that just says that, you know, Chris Florio has an issue and he needs to have this ramp. We can make a reasonable inquiry. We can't make it so dogged that it's going to make it next to impossible for this person to get this ramp in their lifetime. But just bear in mind, because a doctor initially says that they need this, our position is, well, that's great, but we need to have a little bit more information. When I say information, we all know about HIPAA law, all right, the Privacy Act. You can't go so far as to say, tell me exactly what this person's problem is. But that pertains to the ramps. It pertains to the folks who needs the dog, all right, the dog not necessarily just for a C&I dog, but for somebody who may have experienced some trauma in their life, and they need it for purposes of helping them to stay calm and to get through. We all know that everybody has trauma in their life one way or the other, but, you know, it's just something, of course, that we've got to keep in mind. You can't initially say no, but bear in mind that you don't initially need to say yes either. So there is that inquiry that can be made, and you should make it, because we want to make sure that we're not giving special treatment to somebody who's not entitled to special treatment. In the mid-90s, the Fair Housing Act was amended, and that amendment is called HOPA. Housing for Older Persons Act. That set forth at that point that really helped codify exactly how should these associations be able to discriminate. And what that set forth was that you must now have members in your community who are 55 and older. You can make it 55 and older if you have certain criteria. That is, you make this pronouncement, it's 55 and older. You've got rules and regs, and you're doing things that make sure that you maintain that 55 and older. And it got rid of what was initially a problem, that you have what we're going to call senior facilities. All right, things that would be more not necessarily towards retirement villages, but almost a little bit like assisted care facilities. All right, you may have all these associations now. They don't necessarily have a nurse on staff. They don't have a infirmary. Right, that was a problem that we were running into, is that some of these older communities would have that because, quite frankly, they're more assisted living. Now, I understand that some of you, and you can give me a shake of the head, we do have some clients whose kids, they just drop them off, you know, the older parents, and they want it to be an assisted facility, and they'll let the management and the board deal with the problems. That's not what these are set up for, but unfortunately, that's how it goes. That's a different issue for a different time, but the intent was, let's get rid of these issues, or let's get rid of these accoutrements that would make this more an assisted facility than it would be age-restricted. Now, when you're dealing with these types of communities, bear in mind that HOPA also says that you've got to look at a split here. There's this 80-20 split. Everybody's heard about that, that you must be able to show at any one time that you're maintaining 80% of these homes have at least one person living in there 55 and older. Now, that means I'm not quite yet there, but every day, thankfully, getting closer, that I could buy out, if I had all the money in the world, a 300-unit age-restricted community. That's absolutely legal. The issue is not ownership. The issue with age-restricted communities is about occupying. But it's important that you as managers and you as board members keep current as to what is your demographic. Because the Housing and Urban Development have the right, although I've yet to see it happen yet, to come in at any time and to say, show us your records that indicates that these folks that are living here meet that 80-20 split. And what we provided in your forms here is a sample letter that can go out that we're suggesting that at each closing, they've got to stay on top of it. Because quite frankly, it may get to the point, although we're waiting for that case, that if we were to allow somebody to fall below that 55, and let's just say for some reason we were at 80%, And the next person who came in, all right, that was under 55, would bring us below the 80%. There's a good possibility that we're going to lose the ability to discriminate to make this an age-restricted community. So extremely important that you stay on top of that managers, okay, that this is something that's got to be filled out. Requires them to give you a license. I mean, again, you don't just need to say, or the person just can't come in and say, hey, I'm 55. All right, it does require certain proof, and we are giving you some examples of what, you know, would be required. In terms of how you manage these places, and I'm going to let Nicole, you know, give an example in a moment, but I indicated earlier, these are an animal unto themselves. The demographic years ago, as my personal experience, was that these were more retirement communities. I say retirement maybe 20 years ago. When I first started doing this work, the senior developments that we had were more retirement communities. Now, because of just lifestyle, which is the big sell point for these places anyway, it's a lifestyle. And unfortunately, the last couple of years, a lot of these folks are now working. And, you know, I'm going to make an assumption you wouldn't be in agreement with me, that there's a lot of 55 communities where there's a lot of folks who are still out there working. That being said, it still doesn't mean that you may not have 20 committees. Okay, we're always dealing with, you know, oodles and oodles of committees in these associations. The problem that we start running into sometimes is who's running the show. All right, and I want Nicole to speak to that in a moment, but one thing I just wanted to lay out before I give her this opportunity is one of the things that drives me crazy as a lawyer, and it's the builders who are building these things. They know this 80-20 split. Okay, they understand that 80% have to be at least one person 55 and older. From the builder's mind, that means the floodgates open for the other 20. All right? You want to have 20-year-olds in there with 5,000 kids, you can do that. And there is an argument that that is could be appropriate. That's how builders look at it. We don't as practitioners, because we know that there's an issue here. People move into this lifestyle because, one, they don't want to see their kids as much, kiddingly, all right? But you've had enough raising, and you want to be amongst people your own age, and it's a lifestyle. That's what these places are all about. When we come in, all right, and there's a lot of things that happen before, you know, when I say we, the management team, the lawyer team, we're now cleaning up a lot of problems. And thankfully, I'm not seeing it as much. But I did want to mention, this 80% threshold doesn't mean that if your documents are more restrictive, meaning that everybody's got to be 55 and older, or everybody's got to be over 62, those are enforceable, all right? HOPA is just a threshold saying that, folks, one person's got to be at least 55. But if this was set up in your governing documents that everybody has to be of an age minimum, 55 or above, doesn't mean somebody who's 54 can be in there. Doesn't mean that somebody who's going to be 54 next week could necessarily be in there. I mean, there's different shades of gray, and we certainly have to look at that. And please understand that as an attorney, I'm not looking to hurt people. We've had a number of folks who, just because of circumstance, you've got grandparents who are now looking after their grandchildren. I mean, we can give them a little bit of time to say we need you to try and, you know, either get them back to the parents, but we started running into problems when we have those yellow school buses pulling up, all right, outside or inside the development. So you've got the absolute right. I would just suggest that we don't go guns a-blazing immediately because it can be nothing but bad publicity. But as practitioners and as folks who are in the governing body, you folks who are managers and you folks who are on the board, you can't put your head in the sand on these types of issues. It's becoming a little bit more commonplace with folks losing their home, and we're starting to see a little uptick with children starting to move in with their parents in these communities with children. So we're looking at each case individually, but at some point that would also run counter to the ability to discriminate and have these 55 communities, you know, continue. The other little thing I would just ask that you keep in the back of your mind. Builders love to call these active adult communities, okay? I don't know, and I've yet to see one that says senior community, age-restricted community, 55 and older. When I'm talking about that, that's like they're selling brochures. It's not sexy. Active adult is sexy. The problem with active adult, and I've been screaming to the builders and their in-house counsel for years, 25 years old, you're an active adult. And if you're out there selling, and if an association, once it's controlled itself, is still putting itself out as an active adult, some lawyer down the pike is going to possibly challenge that. So I would suggest that if you're using that moniker, that you go back to either, let's go 55 and older, let's do age restricted, all right, or senior housing. I would suggest senior housing last. That's probably the least sexy of all of them. So just a little bit, and I want to give people an opportunity while it's fresh in your mind. If you have any specific questions on fair housing or HOPA, I'll take it now. But then I just wanted to give, you know, Nicole an opportunity to talk about some real-life issues that managers certainly come up with. Yes, sir?
Renters. Someone owns a house.
Yep.
They decide they're going to rent it out. Your docs can require certain information in a certain amount of time, but you can't prevent them from renting to anyone they want. Right?
Did everybody hear the question? The gentleman said renters in terms of asking them for information and that the association cannot prevent them, the homeowner, from renting to whomever they want. That's the question? Okay. If you're in an age-restricted community, that renter has to still meet the same threshold.
But there's the 20%. Is it the builder who can exercise the 20%? Or can a renter rent to someone less than 55%?
If you're maintaining your documents and you've got that 80-20, let's say you're 90% in compliance and you've got this 10% threshold that remains, the argument's going to be had on the other side that I can rent to that individual who's under 55. Right. And as association counsel, I'm probably going to back down and say you can. Okay? If you're on that threshold, if me renting that unit out is going to put me under 80, then I'm going to say no. The issue here, again, is, and the United States has been built on this. It was all farmland. And the term that you may have heard before is, we don't want to alienate people's use of property. But within that, you know, prohibition against trying to alienate, there are certain parameters that government is allowed to say certain uses. And that's why this is important, because this is a statute that says you may discriminate, however, you must meet certain criteria. Okay, so good question, and thank you for that. Anything else on HOPA or fair housing? I'll go around. Yes, ma'am.
How often would I, as a community manager, need to get my residents to verify the age of the people in their home?
It's really every 2 years, but that's kind of what HOPA talks about. You want to do it at least every 2 years, but you want to keep a running count as folks are moving in and moving out. This way it's constantly updated. So we're telling our clients all the time. I mean, most companies have like resale certificate type departments. I mean, it's, you know, in that department that we're finding a lot of this work's being done is utilize that, so you always have a running count. I have yet to see HUD come in yet, but if there's a way to charge a fee to do that inspection, I bet they're going to find it, especially with $800 billion of stimulus money going out that we're going to be paying back. So if there's a way of recouping some of those dollars, but keep it running. At a minimum, the whole community, every 2 years you need to update. You need to have an active census form that if HUD ever comes in. So in that scenario, yes. Okay, but what you may find is if you stay current and it's a running total, and you, or somehow, however you do it internally, you may be able to opt out folks that you know within the last 6 months to a year are relatively new information. Because we need it again, that's a requirement.
Okay.
All right, and then the problem and the way we try and tell folks to explain it is there's a lifestyle here you want to maintain. We're helping you try and maintain it, so you need to help us out. We know that it's a problem. I mean, we have some clients who, you know, 1,600 units that have never done this, and it's taking them a long time to go through this exercise. This gentleman had a question.
I just wanted to ask for clarification on the accommodation that you were talking about. I've heard differing opinions. Most recently, I heard that associations are private. They're not subject to public accommodation, having to honor those types of requests. But then I heard you say that they have to honor a reasonable request. So, I've heard both opinions.
I understand. Everybody hear that question back there? Now, the question being asked is that this gentleman has heard some different opinions about public accommodations. Okay, versus an accommodation. What I had said that, yes, under the Fair Housing Act, one must make an accommodation within a private community. And you brought up an issue, and I'll gloss over it quickly, but thank you for the question. The one thing that folks who have no understanding of private communities, such as what we're all involved in, especially lawyers who like to come in with the guns a-blazing, right, without doing their homework, is Americans with Disabilities Act. That's the first thing they come in with, is ADA. Under the ADA, you must give my client this because it's an accommodation. Now, they may be right that they're entitled to the accommodation, but they're wrong in terms of which law that they're looking at. So the ADA only comes into play if we were a public, all right, housing community. And that brings up a different issue. You run afoul, and this is just a little segue, and I apologize for it. One of the things I'm always trying to get my clients to understand, senior communities especially, and we'll talk about this in a moment, after Nicole gets done. I keep saying that, and she's...
It's fine. I cannot talk for the whole time.
A lot of clients of ours want to know, hey, we want to be able to rent out our clubhouse and make this event open to the public. We have some who have been doing that for years, and of course they tell us only when they've been doing it for years. I'm not going to stand here today and tell you that it's a problem, because I don't know if it's going to be a problem the first, the second, the third time. It's going to become a problem, I think, if you're consistently doing it, 10, 20, 30, because we are private communities. We have the ability, even in a non-age restricted, but an ability to discriminate who comes in and uses our assets. But from the age-restricted standpoint, these are smart folks. They're looking for ways of, how do I keep my fees down? And I can keep my fees down, possibly, if we're renting out our clubhouses. Don't do it. If you're doing it, check with your council and find out. Because, again, I can't say if it's one, two, three times. But you start at some point to be able to say in a serious mode before any judge, well, Your Honor, we've been here since 1995, and during those last 14 years, every month we open this up to the public, but we're a private community, and we don't want this entity coming in here. You're going to lose that case. And you're going to lose that case now because you've now opened yourself up to the public. So the ADA could come into play, you know, under that type of a scenario, but we impress upon people, you do not want your clubhouse being used for other purposes other than your members. Yes, sir?
Two real quick ones. Can the architectural committee have approval rights of the ramps and the aids? You can't deny a disabled person that thing, but you can the architectural committee impose certain restrictions on how it looks?
The answer to the question in back there is, can the architectural committee impose certain restrictions on how a ramp could look? The short answer is yes. I mean, they're not entitled to have the Taj Mahal, all right? And you may, if you do have quite a bit of these, you know, requests, maybe you have like a standard type ramp that can go into, but you have to look at each unit and what's going to be needed so that they are reasonably accommodated.
Can you rent the clubhouse out to members of the community?
That's up
to private functions.
That's up to the association
itself.
Does
that expose you to ADA problems?
No. The question being, can you rent it to your own members? No, it doesn't expose you to that. So let me just, I'll come back to all these questions, and I thank you for it, but let me just give Nicole, because she manages Age Restricted, just some of the issues that, as managers that you face, that are different than dealing with associations that are populated by a lot of different ages, and then we're going to go back and forth a little bit.
I think one of the questions that Chris brought up initially was, who's running the show? And in my experience, it's definitely not the management team. And I say team, not just me, but my advice that I would bring to my boards, you know, talk to your lawyer, talk to your landscaper, things like that. Oftentimes, they neglect my input or just decide to plow ahead without listening. One thing that he did mention briefly was that there are committees for everything. And I have a portfolio of six clients, and in my non-active adult communities. I mean, you have your basic committees, if any. You've got your architectural and you've got your social. But most times I find that they defer to management to do the research and ask the questions and say, what do you think about that? So I think that the perspective is that they view management as more of a, you know, to provide professional recommendations, which is what you're hired to do. In the case of my 55 and older, they do a lot behind the scenes, and many times they just come and say, okay, here's what you're doing. And then you kind of take it and you say, well, did you ever think about this, or did you ever want to do this? And then they just kind of say, nope, we got it all taken care of, and it's more of like a, you're a secretary type of a perspective, at least in my experience. The other interesting thing is how these committees become, how they start, really, is that oftentimes you'll have a person or persons who, you know, maybe like to voice their concerns, and I'm trying to be diplomatic here, a little bit more than other people. So what my boards have done is take that person and say, okay, you're the head of the bocce ball committee. So next thing you know, you've got this person running around, you know, giving out surveys to install the bocce ball court. And I mean, it's nice in one way because it takes a lot of the weight off the management's shoulders. But in another way, it does get to be frustrating at times because you try and be professional. You try and say, you know, offer a venue that may be, you know, more efficient or give a suggestion that may be an easier way of doing things. And they just, they get very stuck in their ways at times. So, I mean, I guess that would be... That would be the main difference, would be how they view management. And just to go back to what he was talking about earlier, I'm actually currently dealing with a situation right now concerning the age restriction and the 80-20 split. There was a lot of questions about the 80-20 split that we knew it was 80% had to be occupied by one person who was 55 or older, but, you know, what was the other 20%? And the situation was that... there's a guy who is, I think he's in his mid-40s, and both of his parents, Pat, who lived in the house, passed away within a few months of one another. And he's been occupying the house in the interim, and he's not causing a problem. You know, he's paying the fee, but, you know, the fact is that he's under the age, and the board wanted to uphold the rule and say, all right, you can stay here for a certain time, but then you have to leave. Well, with the economic times being as they are, this man put the house on the market, but it's just not selling. Now, if this situation occurred, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, you know, it may not really have even been an issue because he would have been in, and then the house would have sold, and then he would have been out in you know, a decent amount of time. But the problem is that, you know, he's claiming that he, you know, he can't afford to live anywhere, so he's trying to sell it, and it's just stagnating. So, you know, of course, I said to the board, you know, why don't we consult with the attorney about this? Because other people in the community had found out what was going on, and it was almost causing a moral issue because you had some people saying a rule is a rule, and the other part was saying, you know, well, you know, he's not causing a problem. He needs to live here. Both his parents passed away. Why don't you just cut the guy a break and let him stay? So you had these opposing issues, and what the board did was they decided to meet with the guy and in the clubhouse, almost like a, you know, they had him, it was a table like this and they were sitting here and they had the guy sitting here. And I mean, I was there just to observe what was going on. And I actually felt bad for him because it was like he was sitting in front of a panel of judges and he seemed very nervous in making his case, so to speak. But, you know, the board did give him an extension and they said, you know, we'll consult with our attorney if the guy gives us a problem. So I guess the moral of that story is that, you know, recommendations along that line that I try to get them to, you know, go talk to this person or, you know, get an opinion of someone whose expertise is in that particular field, and they just seem to want to try their own way first before going to any other venue or spending the money to try and go any other venue.
Cool. Let me just ask a question. How do you deal as a manager with, you know, the issue where you have an elected board and you have committees, especially in the age-restricted context? Next week we see it a lot. And they're always butting heads in terms of who should control, like, say, a finance committee and a board. Mm-hmm. I mean, from a management standpoint, how do you typically try and deal so that, you know, they can either get along or understand what their respective roles are?
Well, in my understanding, it's... I haven't really had an issue like that because the committees that we have, they actually work well with the board. They usually meet without my presence, and they'll have their meetings where the finance committee, I think, meets once a month, and they meet together, and the finance committee will make their recommendations, and then the board will decide to go with it. I really, in my experience, I really haven't had an issue with a committee butting heads with the board.
Okay. Anybody out there, I mean, have these associations where you've got the 20-plus committees and they all think they have their little fiefdoms? let me just speak to that just for a second, then we'll get back to the questions. The problems that we start running into, and we try and explain and understand as counsel, you know, as much as as much as we want to be involved, we understand there's a cost to us. But we try and let folks know that the cost to you normally is more when we're reacting rather than when we're in a proactive mode. And normally coming in one time, and, you know, I understand for some reason, and as Nicole was indicating, that unfortunately a lot of these age-restricted communities look at managers, especially women, unfortunately, as your secretary, which is not what the issue is. They're expecting you to help manage multi-million dollars worth of asset, but at the same time, they don't want to necessarily take a recommendation, bless you, from you, which is a problem. The board's elected. Committees, for the most part, are appointed. And that's what we try and tell everybody. We'll sit the committees down and I'll tell them. He's elected, you're appointed. If you appoint me, appointee, don't like your role, please elect it, get rid of this person. I mean, that's really what it's got to come down to. I don't see it as much from a finance committee. I mean, maybe that was a bad example and I wasn't setting Nicole up for that. I'm seeing it from like a transition committee for the most part. Some documents will actually require you to have a transition committee set up. And it actually also has language in there that says it's a transition committee that's going to sign off on things. Well, we all know from personal experience that what your documents say that you either must do or can't do aren't always necessarily held up by a judge. All right, so my first reaction when I see a document that says the transition committee will deal with the builder and will sign off is no. I don't care what it says. You're going to make recommendations to my board, and my board's going to be the folks who are going to sign off. There's a lot of great knowledge in these communities. We're dealing with a lot of folks who are engineers, accountants, lawyers, and sometimes you've got to try and help them deal with their own egos to work together. But I find, you know, because there is some time, some of the folks are retired, they're just CV, their age experience. I mean, there's a wealth of knowledge, and you want to try and channel that. But we're seeing so much, many times, just this constant hitting back and forth as to who runs it. If you're experiencing that, you need to have your attorney come in and just one time sit them down and say, here's the rules. If not, we're going to disband you and we're going to go somewhere else. I mean, it's come down to that sometimes, but constant governance problems. Other questions? Yes?
Would it be helpful to have a resolution in place bringing the committee into an existence and what their charter is?
Right. The question is, would it be helpful to have a resolution in play setting forth, adopted by the board that sets the committee and what their charter is? It is, but we all know that folks don't pay attention to things they don't want to pay attention to. But it would be. I mean, at least it sets forth. So at least going in when they're getting this appointment and they're volunteering, they understand that you're an ad hoc committee. I know folks may raise their hand. There's sometimes set up an ARC committee is like in the documents. Even if they're in the documents, to me, they're ad hoc. They serve at the pleasure of the board. There can only be one king and queen in these associations because that's when bedlam starts. Yes, sir?
We have two committees that are appointed by the board, ARC and Finance. Mm-hmm. The others are all volunteer. Mm-hmm. They're not appointed by the board. All the committees are told they're only advisors to the board. And as far as finance and all, you need the board, the management company, and the finance committee all working together. It's, you know, the management company's not out of the loop because the finance committee reviews the data they generate, and they should be tracking this stuff, and they should have some kind of input to the budget also. So you really need all three.
Well, I can't disagree, and again, it drives me crazy. Now, I'm not brought in enough times, but you know, I'm just seeing, and most part, again, the age-restricted, that they're looking at the manager as being a glorified secretary, and that's not what they are. And it's sometimes tough to get over that threshold, but I can't agree more with you.
Yeah, you know, I mean, for example, just the glorified secretary, you know, with the finance committee, they meet every month to look at our financials that the management company prepares, and then, you know, they go from there. But, you know, there are certain things that, you know, I'll keep track of, just me personally in the office, like certain bills that come in on a nice little, you know, spreadsheet, which I'll give to them in a management report, so all the information's there, and the next thing you know, at the next meeting, the finance committee guy's given me some other spreadsheet with the exact same information, and it's kind of, it just gets to be frustrating, because you're like, I gave you that already, you know, but they just disregard it, so.
Let me just bring up another example of, a legal issue, a governance issue within an association dealing with committees. And I'll use it as an example of, let's say, a trip committee. A lot of these committees, they all need to understand, number one, that we're a nonprofit corp. Right? We have some associations who have set up separate corporations for some of their committees, depending on what they're doing. But for the most part, you know, let's assume you've got a committee, it's all under the umbrella of the same association. these trip committees, you know, they're looking to sometimes make money for the association. You charge to go to Atlantic City. We've got all these trips planned for the year. And, you know, thank you, association and board, for letting us advertise, for letting us use your offices to have our meetings. But we don't want to hear from you at all. You have nothing to do with us. Wrong. There's insurance issues with those types of folks. And there's always the issue about, well, who handles the money? All right, now, I'm not talking about those that have a separate corp set up. Very few of them do that. But if you've got any committees who are holding their own bank account, I would ask you to revisit that either through both your insurance folks and your accountant, because any dollars coming in, bearing in mind you're nonprofit, the board needs to know about. These folks are not out there on their own just doing their own thing. They've got to report to the board. The board has an obligation to know everything that's going on, and we're seeing that more and more as these trip committees, or whatever you want to call them, want a little bit of a level of independence to raise funds, to have their own checking account, to have basically their own accountant in some of them, until we've, of course, come in and told them otherwise. So just keep that in the back of your mind, that you've got one board, and that board's responsible for everything, and you should have one pot of money in dealing with, you know, this type of a legal issue with your associations. More questions on federal law or something? Yes, ma'am.
I have a question about the committees for the money.
Yeah, I mean, the question is, can each committee have their own account? You can, but I'm suggesting that it not be a separate account apart and beyond what the association has. You may have a different line item with the association's dollars, but I'm just suggesting that the board needs to be in control of all these dollars. Okay, and that sometimes doesn't go over well. All right, but it's one corporation. They need to know everything that's going on. So you may have a different line item and budget for a particular committee or a whole host of committees. All right, but those dollars overall, you know, go up to the association and have to be reported as income.
Only if they turn a profit.
I'm saying notwithstanding if they turn a profit. Yes, ma'am.
I have a different type of question.
Sure.
Committees that are requesting contracts. I have a 55 and over, the landscape committee, the finance committee. They feel they have the right to see the contracts they're signed between the board and their vendor. We wouldn't give out our, you know, management contract to a committee. What do you think about that? Because most of my vendors are saying our contract is between the board and, you know, themselves.
Well, as we all know, Bryn, I mean, we do run into that a lot. But as members, unless there's certain things that are excluded because of certain, you know, other issues that's outside of this discussion, as a member, they have a right to see that anyway. So they don't necessarily have a right to negotiate unless that's their charge, but once it's executed, they've got a right to see any contract that's out there. So while I would do my best if my client's telling me we don't want them to see it, it's going to be hard for me with a straight face to say to that committee, well, you're not allowed to see it. I would agree. It's kind of like splitting a baby. As a committee, you're not entitled. And then make them come back to me and say, as a member. Okay, but we're just stalling for time. Yes, ma'am.
Question to that one is, we don't have to give them a copy, but they can come to our office to review.
If the policy of the association is we don't want to give copies out, that's the policy of the association. From a personal standpoint, I don't see the harm in them seeing it, frankly. Sometimes saying no is a larger problem than just saying, here, come on in here and have a good time and spend the 5 hours to go through what you need to find out. So, anything else? Yes, sir.
55 age-restricted community, no one under 19 allowed to stay more than 3 months.
That's generous.
School taxes. What can the residents do to get a break? They're imposed nothing on the school system.
It's a question asked everywhere. You're going to have to, it's a petition to the state. I mean, you've got to look at it that this, you have a property that gets taxed. All right, the state doesn't care if it's age-restricted or not. They don't, frankly, care if you are not sending children there, which we all know you're not supposed to be, based upon being age-restricted. A lot of communities love these types. I live right across the street from one. Love these because they know there's no pressure on the school, but yet they're going to get some money for it. So that's more of a statewide issue. That's certainly not, you know, individually.
So it's not the school district.
I think you're going to have to go to the state on that. That's state law. Yes, Brent?
Yeah. New Jersey didn't deal with that when they did their services. The
League of Municipalities will shoot us right down. That's a non-starter in New Jersey. All right, we've got to get through our corruption issues first. Anything else on fair housing? Accommodations, any problems that you're running into? Yes, ma'am.
I had an experience with a builder who closed his eyes about the 80-20 and then just checked about everybody. He just sold to everybody. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, the association had no ability to limit the folks coming in until all of a sudden, after about a year or two, when people were starting to sell their place.
Right.
The builder was still selling under the age limit, and I just kept continuing to do that. So the association was in a position where they had to tell people, you can't sell your unit unless it's to somebody who's 55 or older, because that threshold is more. The builder just completely ignored the threshold.
Yeah.
And kept selling to people who didn't meet their criteria.
It's a really easy thing for me to answer that now. I mean, of course, when you're going through it, you're wondering what to do, but frankly, and I've not had to face that, but there's two things that I would have, done if I, had been around. Is one, on behalf of the association, when the builder was doing that, a suit could have been brought to compel them to abide by it. But also, it's a transition claim now. I mean, I don't know yet how to quantify that because I don't know what her damages are in terms of now possibly being looked at as a non-age-restricted community. But if you're going through that transition process with the builder, I'd certainly make that a claim against the builder. All right. If you still have that opportunity, you might want to talk to, council about doing that. Okay. Well, we thank you for your attention. But if anybody has any other questions after, there's information about myself, and I know Nicole can certainly get her out. We're more than happy to answer them. If we didn't answer something or something comes to you, we'd be more than happy to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you.